anyway, this past year, something happened in the fall of this past year that was one of the greatest things that have happened since 2014. And if you know, you know. But what the great thing was is College Football 25 for the Xbox and PlayStation 5 came back out. It's a video game where you play college football. And when I first graduated high school and got a PlayStation 3, I played this game over and over and over again. And this past fall, like after 14, all this NIL money got involved and it ruined it. But now it's back. I don't care if we got to pay the players as long as I got the video game back, right? You know? But anyway, so it's back. And I don't play it all. I'm not addicted, but I like to play the game. So a couple of weeks ago, you can do this thing where you do dynasty mode, where you play like over seasons and seasons and try to be great and all this stuff. But anyway, I was starting a new season with South Carolina. I decided I'm going to play on the highest level there is. I wanted some competition. I played on the highest level there is. And I go into this game against Kentucky. And I know if y'all don't know football, you don't like this stuff, y'all just like, what's he talking about? But just stick with me, okay? And it gets down to 5 seconds. And my kicker lines up to kick the field goal to win the game. And as soon as he kicks it, it goes way to the right. And before the ball could do anything, I hit timeout, quit. Just like that. I'm like, I'm done. I'm going back. And see, what the greatest thing was with this video game is it doesn't, like, if I let it go through, the game's done. I can't redo it. But by hitting timeout, quit, I was able to reset the game, go back to the last checkpoint and reset. And so then I do it again, and then this next game, I get to the second quarter, and something happens where I can't complete a pass to save my life to my own team, and I'm losing by 35 points in like in the second quarter. So what do? I hit start, quit. I did this 5 times. And then I had somehow decided that Kentucky had become like my arch nemesis in life, and nothing I do could win this game. And so I did what everybody else would do, and I lowered the difficulty level. And so, but the whole point is that what I'm getting across is that what I did was I kept resetting it and resetting it, and mainly because it's not that I like losing. I mean, I don't like to lose, but it's like I want to win. But it didn't fit my long-term goals. In order for me to do the dynasty and get the recruiting I wanted, I needed to win this game to build it up. I didn't like the outcome. I didn't like where it was going. It's not what I wanted. The best part was that because of the last checkpoint, it was saved. I could just start over and reset. Have any of y'all ever done that with anything? Where, yes, thank you, Ben. I appreciate that. He don't raise his hand, but he speaks. There you go, Dodger. So the whole fun thing is, like, in life, there's all these times where we just will, like, maybe you're doing something or, like, creating a Lego tower with your kids and it's so bad you want to mess it up or, like, I don't know, the different things in life. You start baking a cake or something and it gets halfway there. You're like, I'm just going to reset this all over. It happens. One of the things that comes up is it's the new year, 2025, which is insane. That is 2025. Man, we are closer to, like, we're just as close to 2050 as we were to 2000. That makes me feel so old. And it shouldn't. But it's weird. But here's the thing. A lot of times what people do at New Year's, what do? They make resolutions. Does anybody still make resolutions? Or is that a thing of the past? Anybody in here? We got some young guys. Anybody else? No takers. All right. You know? Well, one of the things I do is instead of making resolutions every January, every August, I do this thing where I have these checkpoints in my life where I evaluate my life. I ask myself some hard questions and I look at where I am and where I want to go and is everything matching it up. And so, like, I'll get and I'll say, for instance, the last 6 months, I ask myself, what has been good? What hasn't been good? How is my heart? And when I say that, it's like I'm talking about spiritually. So one of the things I did as a student pastor, I would often text the kids, be like, how's your heart? And they knew I wasn't asking like what the blood was pumping out and what BPM and all that stuff. What's your heart rate? They knew I was asking spiritually how they were doing. So if I ever say, how's your heart? Yeah, don't send me your blood pressure, okay? Tell me how you're doing spiritually. So I asked myself, how's my heart? Like, I asked myself, how am I doing as a husband? How am I doing as a father? What needs to be changed? What needs to be pruned from my life? And sometimes I just get to the point where what needs to be reset? What needs to change? And so, how many of us in here wish we had a reset button in life? You know the Staples commercial where they had a little easy button? like where the guy's like, I need this computer, and they just hit the easy button. I don't know, even remember what it was, but you hit the easy button. Imagine if we had a reset button, you know, kick the field goal, it's going right, reset, boom. A couple of years ago against Abbeville, you know, kick the field goal at halftime, reset, let's go again. Ain't that right, Coach Young? You remember that? Yeah. Yeah, that's what you're thinking about. You're over there crying. I get it. I'm with you, okay? Anyway, but see, the thing is, when life happens, it would be just easy if where we could hit a button and reset it all and play it back. Where we have this things of where we constantly say, let me do that again. Let me replay that. How many of you have ever had that thought or that wish in your mind is, I wish I could have that back. I wish I had that one back. Let me replay that. Let me take that text back. Let me get that email back. Let me take those words back. Let me take those statements back. Let me take back what I did, what I didn't do. Let me get all this stuff back before it hurts someone, before I lose someone, before it all comes out. Before I fail, before they see me, before everyone knows. If we're honest, some of us have walked in here today probably wishing they could hit the reset button on life right now. They're feeling like, if I could just go back and start over, maybe it would be different. Maybe if I just had another chance that I can make it right this time. If I could just go back and take back those actions, those words, we wouldn't be where we are today because this is never what I intended. Reality is we all have those and life isn't a game. We can't go back. We can't hit the start button and be like, quit. We can't undo it, but we can reset our lives. We can take where we are, we can evaluate, and we can reset. So we're going to talk about that today as we walk through this. So as we face the new year, I want all of us to be real. I want us to step back, take some evaluation, and look at our life and say, what needs to be reset? What needs to be reset? We've been doing this Friday morning with our men. We started this past Friday, Manuary. If you don't know what that is, it's a play on words. It's where we get our men together in Manuary, and in the Fridays, we get together and we pray and we go through some stuff about being biblical men. The problem is that a lot of churches now, men don't lead the way they should. We're trying to be godly men, and so we sit around and we talk. And this last Friday, we talked about what it looked like to get our faith right back on the right track, what it looked like to reset our faith of who God wanted to be. So if you're a man, I invite you to come join us at 6:30 in the morning here on Friday. At first, I used to hate that time, but now I love it. I look forward to Fridays. I mean, we even got a guy that walks up here. He only lives a block away, but he still walks. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is, if you guys come join us, because we're going to walk through some hard stuff. And if you want to be challenged and you want to be real, come. So the big thing is I want you to take away today as we get into all this is like, here's the reality. When it comes to life and when it comes to spirituality in our faith, we either reset or we remain. We either reset or we remain. A couple of weeks ago, our wonderful student coordinator stood up here and proclaimed how she was so tired because of daylight savings time. The problem was it wasn't daylight savings time. Right? She had set her clock up a night before and she had no clue that it wasn't even the right date. It was a week later. And I say all that because here was the point. If none of us would have ever told her, she would have remained in a whole different universe. But we gave her such a hard time. At Christmas, I meant to get her a clock, but I forgot. I thought it might be too soon, you know. But anyway, the whole point is that for her, it was like if we would have never told her, she would have just remained in her own other plane. Living always late, always early, whatever it would have meant. But being the good people that we are here, we told Haley 2 weeks later. Okay? So, no. But the reality is that I want you to understand is that when it comes to our lives and resetting, if we aren't willing to reset spiritually, mentally, and physically, we're going to remain the same. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad. So this week, we're going to talk about a story. It's going to be in 1 Kings 19. But before I get there, I got to get to the backstory that builds up to that. So Elijah was a prophet in the Old Testament. In 1 Kings 18, read it later. It's a great story. It's one of the greatest Sunday school stories you tell your kids about. Some of it, you make it pretty at the end. But So basically, there's all these false prophets. They worship this god called Baal, and they're influencing the Israelites, the people who live in Israel, to start worshiping this false god. They build these towers for him and all this stuff, and Elijah gets tired of it. And so he calls up 450 of their prophets. They go up to the top of Mount Carmel, and he says, all right, listen, we're going to have a showdown. They're going to handle things the way they did back then. You know, like back in my day, the way we handle things is you got the fisticuffs, right? You know what I'm saying? You got out there. But now the way they used to do things is they used to build altars and have like a fire off. This is what's going on. So they get up there, and he gets all the prophets up there, 450, and they build this altar, and they put a bull on that because that's what you do. And he says, all right, you build one, always 450 of y'all, and then I'm going to build one. And he calls all the Israelites to come up and watch. And he says, all right, the first one that brings fire down from heaven is the real God. So the Israelites, they're watching. So the 450 prophets of Baal, they build their altar and they start doing some chant like, chugga, hugga, chugga. I don't know what they did. They did something, you know, like, ah, hooked on feel, whatever, you know, whatever that was. So anyway. It's me. Y'all know me. But anyway, so they start building this thing. They start doing this chant, and nothing happens, right? And then Elijah's over here to the side. This is literally what the Bible says. And he's like, well, why don't you speak louder? I don't think your God hears you. And so they're like, chugga-hugga, chugga-hugga. You know, like, hooked on. And so same thing keeps going. And then he says they start dancing around the thing. And the whole time Elijah's mocking them. He's like, maybe you need to do the Macarena. And they start like, that's not in the Bible, okay? But they start doing all this stuff around the thing. And then finally it says they get to the point where he mocks them enough that they start cutting themselves and like letting blood go. It's like, come on, whatever they do, their God Baal. Nothing happens. And it's one of those moments like where all of a sudden you see in the old Western movies where the guy walks out of the bar with the swinging doors open. He's like, wow, wow. You know what I'm saying? Elijah stands up. He's like, sit down, folks. Let me show you something. And so what he does is he digs the trench that held 4 gallons of water around the altar. And he calls the Israelites. He's like, hey, boys, come here. It's like, I want you to go get these 4 buckets and fill it up with water. Dump it on this thing. He placed 12 stones for the 12 tribes of Israel in there too. And he said, dump. And he did it 3 times. He soaked the wood. He soaked the bull. He soaked everything. And then he makes this prayer. He looks up and he says, he prays to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And this is his prayer. He says, please consume this altar that we made for you, that they may know that you are God. He didn't pray for them to be embarrassed. He said he prayed that he would send fire down from heaven so that they may know that he is God. That was his prayer. That right there in front of them, that the Israelites would realize this was false prophets. That these false prophets would realize what they were believing was false and it wasn't real. But he wanted them to know that there was a real God. And it said in that moment, fire came down from heaven. And it consumed all the water, consumed all the rocks. And nothing was left there but just dry ground. And then right after that, all the Israelites get happy, like, yee! And he's like, sick the prophets. And they go get all 450 of the prophets, and they just slash them up, get rid of them. I mean, this is one of those great things. It's like it's a spiritual high. Everything is great. And then we pick up in chapter 19. So that's the backstory. He just defeated that. God answered his prayer. Think about that. How many of y'all have ever prayed to God and God answered it just like that? I pray all the time, God, please make me 5'7". It still hadn't happened. You know, just imagine if it would, I grew up like that. You know, whoop, so it'd be great. You don't forget that stuff. But he prayed and God brought fire from heaven just like that. And then we get to this. Okay? We're building up all this. He goes to this. Verse 1, Ahab told Jezebel, has anybody, you know, Jezebel's not a good name in the Bible, right? She's pretty bad. That's why people don't name their daughter Jezebel. Okay, Ahab told Jezebel everything that Elijah had done, how he had done that competition, build him, how he had killed the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent messengers to Elijah saying, may the gods punish me and do so severely if I don't make your life like the one of them by this time tomorrow. Basically said, go tell Elijah, I'm going to kill him. You're going to die. Then Elijah became afraid and immediately ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba, which is about 100 miles away from where he was, that belonged to Judah, he left his servant there, but he went on a day's journey, which is about 5 more miles, so about 105 miles, into the wilderness. He sat down under a broom tree. No clue what that is, but it's a tree that looks like a broom. There we go. And he prayed that night that he might die. He prayed that he might die. And he said, I have had enough, Lord. Take my life. for I'm no better than my fathers. Then he lay down and slept under the broom tree. And it said, suddenly an angel touched him, and the angel told him, get up and eat. And then he looked, and there at his head was a loaf of bread baked over hot stones and a jug of water. So he ate and drank, and he lay down again. Then the angel of the Lord returned for a second time and touched him, and he said, get up, eat and drink, or the journey will be too much for you. So he got up, he ate and drank, and then on the strength from that food, he walked for 40 days and 40 nights to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God. He entered a cave there, and he spent the night. So here's what I want us to understand. If you know anything about the Old Testament, or if you don't, Elijah is like, y'all, like right up there of Moses. He's one of, like, you had a Mount Rushmore of the Old Testament, Elijah's on it. He was a prophet of God. Some would say he's one of the goats, the greatest of all time. Like, when Jesus came along, people, like, asked Jesus, was he Elijah? That's how well known he was. Are you like an Elijah? Because Elijah lived this life, and he walked with God, and said that even at the end of his life, that God took him straight up to heaven. And see, here's what I want us to get. This is a guy, this is a dude. Like, this is a man of God, okay? Man of God, he is a believer. He has just seen God answer his prayer within just like that, okay, right? It's like God bringing down fire, boof, gone, right? You know what I'm saying? And here, he's running for his life, and he is afraid because someone threatened to kill him. Like, how does it go from that quick to that? Like, God literally just sent down fire from heaven, and then somebody threatens him, and he takes off running. And, like, this set on me this week. Like, how do you go from that to that? And you run 100 miles. But not only that, it says this, that this is what he's doing. He prayed that he might die. I've had enough. Lord, take my life, for I'm no better than my father's. Think about what it takes to say that prayer. I mean, think about who this is. This is a man of God, and now he's praying to God. He just prayed, God, show yourself so that they know you are real. And now he's praying, God, let me die. He's broken. He's defeated. He wants to give up. How many of us have ever been there? How many of us have ever felt broken? How many of us have ever felt defeated? How many of us have wanted to give up because faith and life just didn't make sense? And see, here's one of the things I want to say. I want everyone in here to understand that when we come to church, it's okay not to be okay. I don't want people to think that you have to walk in this place and have everything figured out, because then we ain't nothing but a fake bunch of religious people. It is okay to not be okay, and it's okay to say I'm not okay. That's more real than walking in here and doing, how are you? Oh, I'm great. You know, and it's like, well, I will pray for you. You ain't going to pray. I'm joking. Some people do anyway. But the whole point is, guys, we're going to have times of brokenness. But it's what we do with it, that brokenness. And today I want us to ask ourselves the question of, like, are we willing to reset things? Are we willing to tell someone? Are we willing to take that brokenness and let other people walk through us with it? See, we're not playing church, and that's not our goal, to play church around here. We want to be people that carry each other's weight, that we pray for each other, that we help each other grow. In the moment that we quit doing that, let's shut these doors, because we ain't living out what Jesus Christ asked us to be. But it means that we got to be real and understand it's okay not to be okay. See, I believe the power of Christ has the ability to change, heal, move, motivate, alter anything that we go through. So we have to speak it. If you want to see God move, that sometimes you got to be willing to say that I'm not okay, because God has gifted other people in the body and placed people in your life to help you. So, here we are. Elijah's getting real with God under a tree saying, I want to die. Angel comes up and he's like, hey, I don't know how that works. Wake up, eat. And so it says that he wakes up and eat, and he goes 40 days and 40 nights. Like, he's going to travel from that 105 miles. He's going to go 320 miles on foot. The average length you would walk in a day is 5 miles. So if he was walking what you were supposed to walk, 5 miles, like, it was going to take a lot longer. You wouldn't get it done in 40 days. And so anyway, what ends up happening is he goes 320 miles, which means he's almost doing double through terrain and mountain, and he's doing all this stuff. But he's not just going anywhere. He's going to Mount Horeb. This is significant because Mount Horeb is the mountain where God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. Now, some of y'all are going to say, no, that's Mount Sinai. And you are correct. But Mount Sinai is like the top of the mountain. It's like it's like the region. Mount Horeb is the actual location on that mountain. Does that make sense? Like you have the region of Mount Sinai that they call that. It has a lot of peaks. Mount Horeb is the actual location on that mountain that's believed that God gave. So he runs 40 days and 40 nights and he goes there. Why does he go there? Number one, he's broken and he's running to God because he's broken spiritually, mentally, and physically. And all he knows is to go where he knew God had been before. That he knew God had been there before. And I've always been baffled by why that? Why did you run there? And this is what happens when he gets there. God doesn't welcome and say, well, hey, Elijah, how are you doing? It says, suddenly, in verse 9, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Like, think about that, guys. Just think about this. That you run 40 days and 40 nights that you were broken to where you think God is because you need God. And God says, why are you here? That would be like, gee, thanks, buddy. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like the guy that travels all the way across a country when he's in college to see his girlfriend and he surprises her. Hey, she's like, why are you here? It's not good, right? You know, so this is the whole thing. And he shows up and he's probably expecting God to be like, Elijah, here's thou, come here. No, he's like, what are you doing here, man? So he goes on and he says, he replied, I'm very zealous for the Lord God of armies, but the Israelites have abandoned your covenant and torn down your altar and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they're looking for me to take my life. And then he said, go and stand on the mountain in the Lord's presence. And in that moment, the Lord passed by. A great and mighty wind was tearing at the mountain and was shattering cliffs before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, there was a voice, a soft whisper. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and he went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He says, I've been very zealous for you, Lord, God of armies, but the Israelites have abandoned your covenant, torn down your altars, killed your prophets with sword, and I alone am left, and they're looking for me to take my life. So here he is on top of the mountain, and he says, what are you doing here? Now, there's some good other stuff we could get into, the meat right there about all this of God speaking in the silence and in the whisper. We can get that another later date, but I want you to remember this idea that we're going to come back to this, what are you doing here, in a minute. But here he is crying out to God. And basically what he's saying is like, you know, God, something's got to change. Something's got to change. And so here's where I want us to understand that we come to these points in life where we have to reset things or we have to remain in them. In verse 14, this is what he's crying out. He says, listen, I've been zealous for you, God, that I've been coming after you with all I have. I've been wanting to do what you want me to do, but the Israelites abandoned your covenant, torn down your altars, killed your prophets, and I alone am left, and they're looking to take me out. He is broken spiritually, mentally, and physically. Now, if you want to know if this might be you, there's some signs you can look at in your life. This is not a top 10 list, Stephen, but it is a top 9 list. They are signs that show you that maybe you need to reset something in your life. You were tired all the time. You're too busy to spend time with God. You're constantly pessimistic. You have lost your passion for serving others. Negativity follows you everywhere. You have become judgmental. You get easily annoyed. You have forgotten God's faithfulness. And the people you love the most get the worst of you. If that's you, you probably need to reset some things in your life. And I think there's three ways that we do this. I think there's three ways that Elijah's going to work through. It's going to be a reset spiritually. It's going to be a reset mentally, or it's a reset physically. Some of us need all three. Some of us need one. Some of us need two. But the point is, we got to ask ourselves today, like, what needs to be reset in my life? The first one is we look at, there's this reset spiritually. See, what happens is we reset spiritually or we recede. So Elijah tells God, I am zealous for you, but they aren't. I want you to hear this. He says, I'm zealous for you, but the other people, they're not. And I'm all alone. Like, he is telling God, the creator, the father, the sustainer, the one who makes everything, that knows everything, that he is telling God that he had just, the same one that he just prayed for fire to come down from heaven, he's telling him, he said, listen, it's like, I'm zealous for you. I want you with all I have. They aren't, but I'm all alone. Like, think about that. God just answered his prayer, and now he's saying, God, I'm all alone, like God ain't there, right? He's looking at things from a point of view of, like, there's something off. And when our faith gets to the point where we focus on ourselves and others more than we focus on Christ, yeah, something needs to be reset. And right now in this moment in Elijah's life, he's ran 40 days to this mountain just to tell God, like, listen, I have no friends and I'm all alone. Because he's focusing on himself and he's not focusing on God. He's focusing on himself and others. See, we reset spiritually by going back to making Jesus the center point of our lives. And often what happens in our modern society is the reason why we don't make Jesus be the center of our lives is because instead of making him the priority, we look at him as the hindrance. That if I follow Jesus, I can't do this. If I follow Jesus, I can't have this. If I follow Jesus, then I get conflicted about my time and where I need to be and when I need to be there. That if I follow Jesus, if all I've got is going to make me drop some things in my life and make me have to change some commitments up. That we look at Jesus not as a priority of our life, as a hindrance. But here's what I want you to get, that he comes first, that he matters more than any of this. And the problem is, often what happens is, I know what I need to do, but I don't because of fear or whatever. And when that happens, our faith recedes. A.W. Tozier, this great guy, said this. He said, it's amazing how little outside stimulus we need if we have that inward stimulus. It's amazing how much God will meet our needs. It will not be God and something else. It will be God and everything. And then wisely we will gear into our time, and in a moment we'll become alert to the needs of the world around us. And at the same time, our great anchor will be God above, and God will be enough. See, for us, some of us in here today, we need to reset spiritually by just honestly putting Jesus Christ first in our life. And I know that's so cliche, we hear that all the time, but it literally means that we give him the priority of all we got, that we put him first. He gets the best of our time, that we don't give God our leftovers, that I don't make time to pray. I don't make time to for small group or go to church, or I don't make time to read my Bible or think about things of God. I don't give him the times when I don't have anything else. But instead, what I do is I make him the priority where I put everything else around him. See, the reality is most of us want God to give us everything while we give him a little. But then we give him a little and we expect everything. Don't always work that way. So for some of us, we need to give him the best of our time, that we need to make sure we have time for prayer, worship, church, small group, fellowship, service. Because if we don't, our faith will recede. How many of us have ever said that, well, I used to go to church all the time, but I got out of the habit? Or I just let other things get in the way. Or I read my Bible, but I started looking at Snapchat or whatever you, Tinder, or not Tinder. That is not a good one. X. Wow. Yeah. All righty. We'll go back to the Bible now. Okay, it's not the Bible I was thinking about, but still, anyway. But the whole point is we spend our times on other stuff instead of giving him our prime time. But it's the reality. I used to, but I got it out of the habit because we kept letting it be in our priority. But then some of us, we need to reset mentally. We reset mentally or we face ruin. See, here in his mind, he is saying, I am alone and they're going to kill me. I'm alone and they're going to kill me. He has taken this idea of there's no hope. So somehow he has convinced himself and believed it that he is alone. That he has convinced himself and he believes that he is alone and that he's going to die. To the point that he's wanting to die. See, what we don't understand is our mind is a powerful place. Our mind is a powerful place and it plays a huge role in our faith. And what we do up here can alter our lives. How many of y'all have struggled with thinking? You ever had that thought that you wanted to quit thinking, but you couldn't get it out of your head? How many of us ever struggled with how we looked at ourselves or self-identity? This mind is a crazy thing. Jesus even said one of the greatest commandments was to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Physically, spiritually, and mentally. Because the mind goes into a huge part. Because what goes on up here controls what we do outwardly. In Romans, Paul says this. He says, Romans 1:2, do not be conformed to this age, but transformed by the renewing of your mind. Saying that we constantly have to renew our mind and what we think, because we can create bad habits thinking-wise to where we can linger on things we don't need to be lingering on. And what happens is when we linger on that stuff, it starts to make us have these other judgments and things where we forget what reality is and we start to believe the lie. And it's easy in a world where hate and all this discord is to feel like you're alone, to feel like there's no hope. Philippians says this, Paul said this, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there's any moral excellence, if there's anything praiseworthy, dwell on these things. Do what you have learned and received and heard from me and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. He says, listen, if there's anything good, if there's anything great, if there's anything that God is doing, dwell on those things. The word dwell means to live there. To like in our minds that we live in this place of where we're concentrating on the things that God's up to and not the negativity of the world. That we reset how we think and we constantly, and guys, I'll tell you this, this is something I struggle with. There's been days where my mind has been a dumpster fire. Anybody else have to deal with that? That the thoughts are just negative and all this stuff, and I'm constantly having to go to myself and say, this is not reality. This is just what you're trying to think. And I have this thing that is so dumb. It's called negative foreshadowing that I do. It's a psychological term where I make up scenarios that aren't even going to happen, and I play them out in my mind, and I create stress for myself. That is the dumbest thing in the world. That I worry about something that I created in my head that ain't even going to happen. And I'm stressing over it. Like I play these things out now whenever I start doing that. I'm literally like, get that junk out of my head. I'm riding down the road. People think I'm giving this new, like people start doing that back. They're like, hey, Trey, how you doing? Like, I'm like, yeah, you just don't know what I'm doing, but I'm getting rid of junk. So the whole point is this, man. It's like, you know, we have to sit there and realize that some of us, that's just one of our struggles, is that we constantly have to reset. We constantly have to renew our mind because that sometimes our mind can be our worst enemy. For some of us, it means that we got to change our habits. I had to relearn how to think. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, then, man, you are good. Reality is there's about 5% of people in the world that honestly don't care what other people think. The other 95% of us wish we were like them, right? But for some of us, we got to reset how we think. We got to be willing to ask for help. It's like, man, I struggle. After the first service, I had people coming to me and say, Trey, I struggle with the same thing. What do you do? I said, I told you, give me five right there. I didn't do that, but I should have. This church is going to be like, people can think we're praising, we up here. If y'all start doing that when I'm preaching, it's going to get real now. All right, that's all I'm saying. Y'all over there, get that negative thought out, Trey's head out there. But anyway, just some of us, we got to ask for help. We got to lay it out there. We got to reset mentally. And for some of us, it means you might need help more than what we can do. Talk to your physician. It's real. But another way that we do, we reset, is we reset physically. We reset physically or we reduce the amount of use. Basically, physically plays a huge part in the other two. He ran for 40 days a night. He turned in an 80-day trip into a 40-day trip on foot. Wes, one of our guys in the sound booth yesterday, texts me and he's like, man, he's like, I just rode a bike for 4.5 hours. And I'm like, man, I just got tired reading that. Like, you a stud, dude. I'm not going to say what he responded back because I don't want to embarrass other people. But he did. He literally was like, man. But this guy went 40 days and 40 nights of hard labor, and he's coming to talk to God. If you don't think that impacts you, that physically what we do with our lives don't impact, have you ever heard the decision, don't make decisions when you're tired? Why? Because when we're tired, we make dumb decisions. You can't think. Your mind don't work the way it's supposed to. There are a lot of decisions I wish I could have back. A lot of experiences where I got back from a trip that I was tired and somebody wanted to get in the conversation. I beg and pleaded, don't do it now because it's going to be an ugly mess. Guess what? They chose the ugly mess. And I tried to hit the reset button. You know what I'm saying? Like the whole time I reset. But physical plays a huge part. Some of us need to reset some physical boundaries in our life. This can be broad. For some of us, it's health. That we need to reset our lives in health. Because our health can reduce the amount of use that God can use us for his kingdom. For some of us, we need to reset our time. Our priorities. What do we do with our time? For some of us, it might be that we need to reset how we use our money. It might be how we use our resources. We need to reset our rhythms in life. We can change our rhythms and habit that allow us to be more available to God, more and less. But we need to reset what we're doing physically. Because honestly, how we're doing physically will affect how we're doing mentally and spiritually. That's why Jesus is so smart that God even told them in the Old Testament, he called it the Shema, and he had everybody memorize. He's like, love your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. The physical, spiritual, and the mental. Because they all work together. And then here's God's response to Elijah. Elijah comes and he drops all this junk on him. I'm alive. I want to die. I'm alone. There's nobody with me. Everybody's abandoned you. It's only me, God. And God says this to him. The Lord said to him, go and return. So he like dumps all this junk on God, and God says, go back. Go back. He says, go and return. And by the way you came to the wilderness of Damascus, when you arrived, you were there to appoint Hazael, the king of Aram, and you were to anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi. Man, that's like kimchi. Nimshi, as king over Israel, and Elisha, son of Shaphat, from Abel Meholah. So he'll be the prophet in your place. Then Jehu will put to death whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death whoever escapes the sword of Jehu. But I will leave 7,000 of Israel, every knee that is not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So basically, that God tells him, he says, listen, go back. Go back. And he reminds him of three things. He says, listen, I'm still God. And I'm still at work. So go back and anoint the guy that's going to be after you, Elisha. And then secondly, he says that I have plans that will outlive you. Go back and anoint Jehu. Go back and anoint Hazael. Go back and anoint Elijah. And they're going to kill the ones, and the ones that Elijah don't get, Jehu will get. The ones that Jehu don't get, Hazael will get. I have plans that will outlive you. And then thirdly, listen, you're not alone. The kingdom isn't over. Just open your eyes. There's 7,000 that have never bowed down to Baal. And so here's what I love in verse 19. It just simply says this. Elijah left there and found Elisha. So here he is, and he's got to make this choice that he does all this dump on God about. He goes to him, and he has this big spiritual moment up on the mountain, and he pours out his heart to God, and he tells him, listen, this is what's going on. I'm all alone. I want to die. But in reality, he makes this choice to reset. And it literally says that he left, and he went back and did what God told him to do. That he got back in the game. That he came broken, he reset, and he went back. I still think about this because that phrase, what are you doing here, just stuck out to me all week. What are you doing here? And it made me ask the same question to myself. What am I doing here? What am I doing with what God has given me? And Friday morning, one of the verses that we've been going through is Ephesians 5, 15 through 17. And it says this, be careful, pay careful attention to then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of the time because their days are evil. Like, that's Paul talking to the church of Ephesus, making the most of the time. Like, are we making the most of the time that God has given us here? Are we making the most of what God has given us? And that as we look over 2025 and we look at the future, we have to ask ourselves, am I where I wanted to be? Am I going where I want to go? Am I leading myself? Am I leading my family to a place where we see ourselves going? Or do I need to reset some areas of my life? So the other night, New Year's Eve, I had a couple of friends over. And we were out there and we're by my fire pit and we're starting to build a fire. And so I get a piece of lighter and, you know, I throw it down in the bottom of the fire pit. Usually I'd go all out and I get all the other stuff. You know, I majored in outdoor rec in college, and one of the things we learned how to do is build a fire, you know, and basically that's what happens when you go to caveman tech. You learn how to build fires. Professor Ugg said I was very good. So anyway, so I throw this kindling in there, and I know that I need to build it up. I know I need to let it grow, but I put this piece of lighter in there, and then I just throw this old dry log over it. And the two guys with me is like, Trey, you can't do that. I said, just watch. So I light that up. And they're looking like, Trey, you really need to, like, get smaller stuff and put it in there. And I'm like, guys, come on, man. I know what I'm doing. I'm good. So I get another piece of lighter, and I throw it up under there, too. And it still doesn't catch. And so being the man that I am, I go get lighter fluid, right? And so I get the lighter fluid, and I'm like just chunking the lighter fluid on there. It's like, look, guys, it's on. And then after a minute, it went out too. And they're like, man, Trey, just let us go get some wood. Let's chop it up. I'm like, no, we're good, guys. It's going to catch. Well, eventually they got up. They did their own thing, and they got it, and they hopped up some smaller pieces. They got the kindling. They got the fuel in there, and the fire got going, and it was fantastic. And I was thinking about this week because the reason why I say that is like I asked myself later, why didn't I just do what I should have done to begin with? Why didn't I just reset the fire and start over? Why didn't I just put out the lighter and go ahead and rebuild the fire? Because I know I needed it. I knew that wasn't going to work. It mainly came down to a couple of things. Number one, it was like, I was just being lazy. I was comfortable. Had my little beach rocking chair right there, swinging back like, man, this is good. I don't really want to do it. And there was a part of me that just didn't care. Like, it would be fine. But the hardest part for me was that it was my pride. That I know it needed. That I know what it needed to be due, but part of me was just this little part of me inside that just wanted to be right. Even though I was with people that there was no judgment about it. And see, here's the thing, is the reality that some of us in life keep taking L's because we're just lazy. Some of us just keep taking L's because we're prideful. Some of us just keep taking L's just because we don't care. But here's what I want us to get, is that I believe that Jesus Christ is the key to changing our lives. Like, Jesus Christ is the best thing that ever happened to me. And I'll say that to anybody that asks. It's the greatest thing that ever happened in my life, and I can't even imagine what my life would be like if I wouldn't have became a believer. But here's the thing I want us to get, that if you want to see something drastically change in your life, it starts at Christ. If you want to see things drastically change in your faith this year, it starts with Christ. If you want to see things happen in your marriage that you couldn't even imagine, it starts with Christ. If you want to see your household and how your parents change, it starts with Christ. And I could go on and on about it, but I'm so passionate because I know what Jesus Christ can do. Whenever we put him in the priority and we reset our lives around him and allow him to be in the center, he changes things. He changes things. And so as we get in here, I just ask, what is it? Don't be too proud to admit that I need to reset something in my life. Don't sit by the fire and just wish it will happen because we're so proud. Instead, stand up and do something. So today as we come and we sing, this is all I'm asking you to do. What needs to be reset? Maybe it's all three and you just need to get down and say, Jesus, I need you to be the king of my life and give your life to Jesus for the first time. Or maybe you need to reset physically. Last year, I made this decision to change my life physically, and it's one of the greatest things I ever made. This year, my goal is to change spiritually, to like take my faith a little bit deeper. Maybe you just need to change mentally. Maybe you need one or two, or you need all three. It don't matter. The whole thing I'm asking is, if you know there's something you need to reset, then have the strength to do it. You can put your name on a card and put it in the black box and say, Trey, I just need help. Or you can say, pray with me about this. You can go, come find me up front. I'll pray with you. You can come up and take communion. That's what we do. We come up and we take communion to remind us of who God is. And we say, listen, this is something I'm giving to you. Maybe it just means you tell someone. Or maybe you start realizing that you need to make the most of what God has given you. But as we live in the 2025, imagine what can happen next year at this time if we reset our lives to be about Jesus Christ. Let's pray. God, we thank you. And God, this is my prayer that we wouldn't be too proud to admit that we need to reset some things, that we just won't sit by and watch a fire never catch up because of our pride. But more importantly, God, that we wouldn't watch our marriages fail, that we wouldn't watch our relationships fail, that we wouldn't watch our faith fail because we're too proud to admit that something needs to change, or we're too scared of what it looks like to change, or we're too worried about what other people will think for it to change. But instead, God, that we would be people that you would just move us to be willing to reset things in our life, to just know you, to experience you. So God, my prayer is that we would all today evaluate what needs to change. So God, I just thank you and I ask you to just move in our hearts, that you already started stirring up something in the first service, and I'm hearing comments and feedback from people. God, and my prayer is you do it in this one too. That we'd be real with you, God. In the moment that we quit being real, then we quit being the church. So God, let us have this moment of realness that we really ask ourselves, what needs to change? And then we have the strength to do something about it. Just pray all these things in your name. Amen.